The blue overalls of the party could not be a common sight in a street like this. Indeed, it was unwise to be seen in such places unless you had definite business there. The patrols might stop you if you happened to run into them.
May I see your papers, comrade?
What are you doing here? What time did you leave work? Is this your usual way home? And so on and so forth. Not that there was any rule against walking home by an unusual route, but it was enough to draw attention to you if the thought police heard about it. Suddenly, the whole street was in commotion. There were yells of warning from all sides. People were shooting into the doorways like rabbits. A young woman leapt out of a doorway a little ahead of Winston, grabbed up a tiny child playing in a puddle, whipped her apron around it, and leapt back again, all in one movement. At the same time, a man in a concertina-like black suit, who had emerged from a side alley, ran towards Winston, pointing excitedly to the sky.
"Stay there!" he yelled. "Look out, Governor! Bang over red! Lie down quick!"
Steamer was a nickname which, for some reason, the proles applied to rocket bombs. Winston promptly flung himself on his face. The proles were nearly always right when they gave you a warning of this kind. They seemed to possess some kind of instinct, which told them several seconds in advance when a rocket was coming, although the rocket supposedly travelled faster than sound. Winston clasped his forearms about his head. There was a roar that seemed to make the pavement heave. A shower of light objects pattered onto his back. When he stood up, he found that he was covered with fragments of glass from the nearest window. He walked on. The bomb had demolished a group of houses 200 meters up the street. A black plume of smoke hung in the sky, and below it, a cloud of plaster dust in which a crowd was already forming round the ruins. There was a little pile of plaster lying on the pavement ahead of him, and in the middle of it, he could see a bright red streak. When he got up to it, he saw that it was a human hand, severed at the wrist. Apart from the bloody stump, the hand was so completely whitened as to resemble a plaster cast. He kicked the thing into the gutter, and then, to avoid the crowd, turned down a side street to the right. Within 3 or 4 minutes, he was out of the area which the bomb had affected, and the sordid, swarming life of the streets was going on as though nothing had happened. It was nearly 20 hours, and the drinking shops which the proles frequented, pubs, they called them, were choked with customers. From their grimy swing doors, endlessly opening and shutting, there came forth a smell of urine, sawdust, and sour beer. In an angle formed by a projecting house front, 3 men were standing very close together, the middle one of them holding a folded-up newspaper, which the other two were studying over his shoulders. Even before he was near enough to make out the expression on their faces, Winston could see absorption in every line of their bodies. It was obviously some serious piece of news that they were reading. He was a few paces away from them when suddenly the group broke up and 2 of the men were in violent altercation. For a moment they seemed almost on the point of blows.
"Can't you bloody well listen to what I say? I tell you, no number ending in 7 ain't one for over 14 months.
"Yes, it has, then."
"No, it has not. Back home, I got a whole lot of them for over 2 years, wrote down on a piece of paper. I takes them down regular as the clock. And I tell you, no number ending in 7. Yes, a 7 has one. I could pretty well near tell you the bleeding number. 407 it ended in. It were in February, second week in February. February, your grandmother. I got it all down in black and white, and I tell you, no number—"
"Oh, pack it in," said the third man.